From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The head of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East, said that the evidence collected at the site of the bombed UN school in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza indicated that it was Israeli shells that killed 16 people and wounded scores more. Jocelyn Sambira reports from the United Nations.
The shelling of a UN school that doubles as a shelter for thousands of displaced persons represents a serious violation of international law. That's according to the Commissioner General of the UN Relief and Development Agency for Palestinians, UNRWA. On Wednesday night, the Jabalia Elementary Girls' School was hit by artillery fire, causing multiple deaths and injuries. An official death toll has not yet been released. UNRWA says that after gathering evidence at the site and analyzing fragments, examining craters and other evidence, their initial assessment points to Israeli artillery. Pierre Krahenbuhl is the UNRWA Commissioner General.
We had repeatedly informed the Israeli Defense Forces about this particular school. We had notified it because it was important to protect it, and also because the people who were in this school were there because they had received instructions from the Israeli Defense Forces to leave the areas that they lived in, and therefore they were sheltered in that premise, hoping and expecting there to be safe and protected. And the fact that they weren't is unacceptable. And in the strongest possible terms, I issue today a condemnation of the Israeli shelling of the school as representing a serious violation of international law.
It's the sixth time that a UN emergency shelter was struck. Since the beginning of hostilities, UNRWA has lost seven staff members. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
On Wednesday, the UN Security Council discussed the situation in Gaza. Vitaly Churkin, Russia's permanent representative, told the council it was not doing its job.
Unfortunately, the Security Council was not able to play the role which the international community rightfully expects of it. Operations in the Gaza Strip continue, an operation with significant casualties amongst the Palestinians. Rockets continue to be fired against Israel. July 28th's presidential statement on the situation around Gaza, although it's accurate, it is not up to the situation and came just a tad late. It is clear that the Council's effectiveness in such cases hinges largely on the proactive work of penholders and delegations from the region. As experience has shown, crises between Israelis and Palestinians often erupt as a result of the fact that the unilateral efforts by the United States aimed at reconciling the parties have yet again failed. We repeatedly pointed to the fact that secretive methods of work have outlived their usefulness. The need to elaborate more effective mechanisms for a settlement is long overdue.
Palestine's permanent observer to the UN, Dr. Riyad Mansour, also addressed the council. We will bring you his remarks in full later in this newscast. There's been a lot of activity in Latin American countries in relation to the war on Gaza. On Wednesday, the president of Bolivia, Evo Morales, listed the Israeli government as a terrorist organization based on its operation in Gaza. Also on Wednesday, Brazil, Ecuador, Chile, Peru, and El Salvador recalled their ambassadors from Israel, and Costa Rica is reportedly also considering that measure. And Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Venezuela, and Paraguay issued a joint statement Wednesday during the Mercosur conference that called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and declared support for the Palestinians. Not all of the countries involved are socialist or even have left-leaning governments, such as Peru, and Paraguay is actually governed by a right-wing government. The death toll from an outbreak of Ebola in West Africa has now risen to over 700, according to the WHO Thursday. 57 deaths were reported between July 24th and 27 in Guinea, Liberia, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone, according to Reuters. Nigerian authorities have so far identified 59 people who had come into contact with a U.S. citizen who died in Lagos last week after traveling from Liberia via Togo and Ghana, according to the WHO. Sierra Leone has declared a public health emergency to tackle the worst ever outbreak of the disease. The country will also call in security forces to quarantine designated epicenters of the virus, according to President Ernest Baj Karoma, who canceled the visit to Washington for a U.S.-Africa summit next week because of the crisis. A similar anti-Ebola package was announced by neighboring Liberia Wednesday evening. A prosecution inquest panel has decided that three former executives of Tokyo Electric Power Company should be indicted for their handling of the March 2011 disaster at Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. We have this report from the Japanese news agency, NHK World.
Residents of Fukushima Prefecture and others filed criminal complaints in 2012 against more than 30 people, including officials of the Tokyo Electric Power Company. They cited the utility's lack of precautions against a massive quake and tsunami. The prosecutors decided last September to dismiss the complaints, so the residents and other plaintiffs took the issue to an independent judicial panel of citizens. They narrowed their targets to six former TEPCO executives, including Tsunesa Katsumata, the chairman at the time of the disaster. The panel concluded on Thursday that Katsumata and two others should stand trial. Prosecutors will now decide whether to indict those who have been deemed trial-worthy.
Kiev authorities may be seeking to destroy evidence which implicates their role in the crash of the Malaysian jet, Russia's UN envoy Vitaly Churkin said on Wednesday, expressing concerns over the ongoing military operation in East Ukraine in violation of a UN resolution.
Mr. President, on July 17th, all of us were shocked by the horrible tragedy which took place in the skies above Ukraine. 298 individuals aboard the Malaysian Airlines flight perished. The Security Council rapidly adopted Resolution 2166. 2166, which required a full, painstaking, and independent international investigation of this event in keeping with the guiding principles of international civil aviation, with an appropriate role being played by ICAO. One of the important provisions of the resolution, one which was incorporated upon the insistence of the Russian delegation, is the requirement to immediately cease in the region directly adjoining the disaster all military activities to secure and safeguard the area during the conduct of the international investigation. The president of Ukraine stated that military operations will cease in a radius of 40 kilometers around the crash site. This promise, however, was immediately broken, and Ukrainian officials quite publicly spoke of a new task to cleanse this territory of self-defense formations and take it over. Such actions are a direct violation of Security Council Resolution 2166, and they are fraught with the most dangerous of consequences for the conduct of an objective and impartial international investigation. We fear that the authorities in Kyiv, pushed by a desire to destroy evidence which points to their role in the Malaysian Airlines disaster. On July 28th, the Russian delegation proposed to members of the Security Council to adopt a simple and ambiguous press statement, one which bolsters the provisions of Security Council Resolution 2166 on a ceasefire. However, it was quite unceremoniously blocked by some Security Council members, those who clearly were not interested in a full implementation of 2166. We welcome today's statement by the Secretary General of the United Nations calling for an immediate cessation of combat activities around the crash site.
Meanwhile, Dutch and Australian forensic teams Thursday finally reached the Malaysian Airlines crash site for the first time, accompanied by OSCE monitors, after almost a week of trying to access the scene. However, explosions were reportedly heard upon their arrival close to the area where the delegation was located. But for the U.S. mainstream media, the Ukrainian crisis is a pretty clear picture. In their eyes, all the complexities involved boil down to one person, the Russian president. RT's Gayan Chichikayan reports.
No matter how complicated an issue, you can be almost certain that the media are going to boil it down to personalities. Well, with Ukraine, it's one personality, the Russian president.
What does he do when he isn't working or off on an outdoor adventure? And why don't we see him smiling very much?
He's not really driven by women or distracted by alcohol.
He's very tough. He's a very arrogant person to deal with.
And What kind of diplomacy can you expect moving forward when diplomats use this kind of language? This is the UK ambassador to the United States speaking.
Give me three adjectives you'd use to describe Vladimir Putin.
Well, I'm not a poet, but I think thuggish, dishonest, I'm afraid, comes to mind because we've had all these lies. I think I'd say reckless, too.
Makes one wonder if they really want to solve a problem or if they're good with the current state of affairs.
The head of the CIA apologized privately to lawmakers Tuesday after an internal review revealed that CIA employees had secretly monitored, as alleged, the computer usage of certain Senate staffers. CIA Director John Brennan's admission this week that members of his agency, quote, acted in a manner inconsistent with the common understanding, closed quote, among the CIA and the Senate Intelligence Committee came months after Senator Dianne Feinstein from California, who chairs the panel, complained on the floor of Congress that her staff had been subjected to covert monitoring as they worked on an official investigation into the CIA's now allegedly defunct detention and interrogation practices. That report, a 6,300-page review of tactics employed by the CIA, considered by some to be forms of torture, has yet to be made public. Meanwhile, a classified report that was apparently released by accident reportedly says that some U.S. embassy personnel who were involved in that torture, or as it's euphemistically called, harsh interrogations, were instructed to hide those activities from the Secretary of State and other senior State Department personnel. According to a report in The Guardian, the Senate report on the CIA's interrogation and detention practices concludes that the agency initially kept the Secretary of State and some U.S. ambassadors in the dark about the techniques and about secret prisons, citing a document that was circulating among White House staff. The still classified report also reportedly said that some ambassadors who were informed about interrogations of detainees at so-called black sites in their countries were instructed not to tell their superiors at the State Department. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Marie Harf was tight-lipped when asked about it at her Thursday press conference.
Do you know, is this a normal practice where ambassadors are instructed not to withhold certain information from secretaries of state on this or any other issue?
Well, let me say, first of all, the talking points and the Q&A contained within those don't represent the views of the State Department. We're not fully vetted within the State Department in terms of the number of people that needed to see them. In fact, very few people saw them before they erroneously sent them to the NSC. So the information contained in them, I'm obviously not going to speak to until a now classified report is released publicly, and we can have a conversation then. But I do want to make clear that the talking points and the information contained in them don't represent the views of the State Department, and I'm sure we'll be having conversations about this once it is, in fact, declassified and released.
What do they represent, then?
Well, I'm sure the person who wrote them and who represented their personal opinion. Look, the administration...
You're saying that these talking points are the personal opinion of one person?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, broadly speaking, the Secretary, Secretary Kerry, and this department are proud of the CIA, are proud of the work it's done to keep us safe, and to support our diplomats, not just in Washington, but all over the world. I think the fact that we are willing to acknowledge past mistakes and to learn from them is really what makes, I would say, our country great, but also the CIA unique among intelligence services, and that this administration has been clear that we did not support the detention interrogation practices. That's why we ended them. Again, these points were very draft points that had been drafted by someone in this building and not vetted through the process that this normally goes through, and therefore don't represent the consensus view of the State Department or the people here.
Okay. You say that it is not policy? It is, or
I'm
it is not?
I'm not going to comment in any way on anything contained in that document about a classified report that has not been declassified. We will have full discussions, I'm sure, about the issues brought up when it is released to the public. I'm not going to answer your question.
As a general principle.
And which will be soon, by the way.
As a general principle, do ambassadors frequently withhold information from their bosses back in Washington?
I'm just not even going to comment on anything that you are bringing
up.
That.
As the death toll continues to mount in Gaza, the UN Security Council discussed the situation there again on Wednesday. Dr. Riyad Mansour, Palestine's permanent observer to the UN, made the following remarks.
I am sure that all of you listened very closely to two statements by two leaders involved with humanitarian issues. And I am sure that you were able to conclude from these two statements of the extent of the genocide being unleashed against an entire population of 1.8 million civilians in the Gaza Strip against the Palestinian people. And I'm sure that you listen to the statement that there is no safe place in the Gaza Strip, and it is so obvious that the entire civilian population is under attack by the Israeli army and the Israeli extremist rightist government of extermination of 1.8 million civilian population. I just want to express our gratitude to the principled, brave statements by these two international leaders who couldn't cover up on the crimes committed against our people. And although the representative of the criminal regime and government of Israel tried his best to tell you stories of defending the conduct of his government, which cannot be defended. And I am sure that you are journalists with hearts and with minds, and you will not fall in the trap of the falsification and lies of trying to defend this onslaught against 1.8 million civilian Palestinians. And also, I totally agree with the sentiment of our people in the Gaza Strip that they feel that the international community is failing them. They are not coming to put their weight on the line and to say enough is enough, and this genocide cannot be tolerated and should be stopped immediately. Anyone with a heart, anyone with a conscience, to listen to these two statements of these two international leaders would be crying from pain and shame for the fact that this, in the 21st century, this genocide is being unleashed against the entire civilian population in the Gaza Strip. After their statement, one cannot say much, because I think they were so clear in pointing out to the magnitude of this tragedy and the catastrophe that is befalling on the Palestinian people. Natural catastrophes, as we saw it in Haiti and the Philippines, people can deal with it and cannot do much about it happening. But when you see a human-made catastrophe in the 21st century against an entire civilian population in the Gaza Strip, one cannot but be appalled by the fact that there is such a government and an army using non-convincing argument for unleashing its firepower against an entire population with large number of children, women, civilians. 80% of the victims, the dead and the injured, are civilians, as Ms. Amos indicated. This is unacceptable. This is a crime against humanity, and those who are involved in it should face justice and should be brought to face accountability.
Sir, Ambassador, you've said the international community is failing your people. What specifically are you asking the United Nations to do?
Well, first of all, that the Commissioner General of UNRWA said the sentiment of the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip is that the international community is failing them. And I agree with the sentiment of our people in Gaza, because after almost a month of this aggression, after almost a month of this war of genocide against an entire civilian population of 1.8 million in the Gaza Strip, and the Security Council is dragging its feet and just only adopting press statements and presidential statements and press elements without elevating itself to the point of having a political will to stop this genocide and to condemn this genocide and to provide protection for our to our people from those who are massacring them, then you cannot but conclude correctly that our people in the Gaza Strip are correct in saying that the international community is, you know, failing them.
Mr. Ambassador, the Director General of UNRWA said that 130 UNRWA installations or facilities have been damaged. They've lost seven staff members. Some of their facilities have been deliberately shelled with heavy civilian casualties. In any other part of the world, the Security Council would have condemned these attacks on the UN. What is happening here that they have not so far condemned any attacks on the UN or loss of UN staff in Gaza?
I think that there is a big test for the 15 members in the chamber as they are deliberating now. I think test to their hearts, test to their conscience, test to their brains, whether they will condemn this, all these crimes, and to declare a clear position in this regard, or whether they will use political expediency and ignore this call from the Palestinian people, this cry from the mothers and the children of Palestine in the Gaza Strip, who are in deep pain, hundreds of thousands of people displaced, thousands of our women pregnant, and they don't know where to deliver their babies, and the details of this horrific situation and the carnage against our people, in which Shuja'iyah, for example, was leveled to the ground. People were telling me that the scenes are similar to the scenes that they were able, that they saw in footage of towns destroyed during World War II. So these horrific situations are not things targeted against military forces or soldiers. These are activities of those who are going after the entire civilian population in a very tiny, condensed area of the Gaza Strip, and those who are conducting themselves in this manner are criminals and should face justice. And the Security Council, if they allow their conscience and their hearts and their minds to act correctly, they would come to such conclusions and would act. Yes.
Mr. Ambassador, the Director General of UNRWA called for on Israel to conduct an investigation into yesterday's event in Jabalia. Do you think Israel is capable of doing it? Do you think that that's the way to go? Do you think, as you said, that there should be an international investigation?
I think when a party commits a crime like that, objectively speaking, they are not qualified to conduct a transparent and an objective investigation. I heard him, you know, calling for that, but I believe that the Security Council and the Secretary General of the United Nations should conduct an independent investigation about that massacre and to go after those from the Israeli army and their officers and their political leaders who have authorized such a heinous massacre against the Palestinian people in that UNRWA school. Yes. You asked the question before.
No, I have not.
You have not?
No, I have not.
Then you ask the question, and then you're next, and that will be the last question. Go ahead.
Sir, why are you not demanding a vote on the resolution?
Well, you know the political situation in the Security Council as much as I do. And we would love to see a resolution adopted, not today, but even, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, before. Because it is the duty of the Security Council, which is entrusted in the maintenance of international peace and security, to act. And the longer they do not act, the more people will be frustrated, and the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip would reach this conclusion that the international community and the Security Council is failing us. So, but I hope that the Security Council to reach a conclusion today, as soon as possible, to adopt a resolution condemning this aggression, demanding its stopping it immediately, calling for the implementation of Resolution 1860 that calls, among other things, of lifting the blockade against our people in the Gaza Strip. Because when you put 1.8 million Palestinian civilians in this huge prison, denying them food because they cannot fish in the sea, denying them electricity, denying them safe places, denying them adequate, you know, medical facilities, denying them clear water. What are you doing? Isn't that genocide? This is not going after a political group that you don't like. You are going after the 1.8 million Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip. And I think that the testimony of the two international leaders is a clear clear indictment of the Israeli government and the Israeli government who are unleashing this war against the entire civilian population in the Gaza Strip. So I hope that a resolution to be adopted as quickly as possible. Yes.
Thanks, Ambassador. Yesterday, the U.S. Department of Defense confirmed that they had just recently, during this conflict, transferred ammunition to Israel from something called the War Reserve Stockpile Ammunition-Israel. And this was, they said that this is consistent with their position of support of assisting Israel to develop and maintain strong and ready self-defense capability. What do you think of that transfer at this time? And do you think there should be some people have said there should be some kind of condition on it? Basically, it's the ammunition that's being used in Gaza currently being transferred by the U.S. to Israel.
What the Gaza Strip needs is not more weapons for causing more death and destruction. What we need is to stop this war machine. We need to address the humanitarian situation, to need to send food, medicine, clean water, to fix the power plant, to provide people with electricity, to allow people to go and dig the rubbles for the dead relatives, to attend to the wounds of the injured people who are in the thousands in hospitals. Hospitals cannot look after that, and to attend to the needs of the hundreds of thousands who are displaced, to allow people to receive foodstuff and all the necessary things for life, and to stop this onslaught against our people so that all of us can think clearly and to move in the political direction for addressing the root causes of this crime and this tragedy, and to lift the blockade against our people, and then to allow the people in the Gaza Strip, the 1.8 million, to go back to as normal life as possible under occupation, and to open doors for peace. Because while we are extremely upset about these crimes committed against our people and the killing of large number of children, women, and civilians, yet in the same time we are not losing our mind, and we are interested in a political solution to this conflict on the basis of ending this occupation and allowing for the independence of the state of Palestine, so that we can put in place a two-state solution where our people can live in freedom and dignity and can attend to their wounds and move in the direction that is different than the direction of hate and resentment that is being injected in our society because of the crimes committed as we see it. Because when you obliterate an entire family with all of its members, and there are dozens of families that have been killed, all of them totally. And when you kill, somebody kills your children and members of your family, are these elements for creating tranquility and understanding tolerance? No, these are elements of injecting more hatred, resentment, and not liking each other and fighting against each other. And for us, if we want really to build a culture of peace, we have to stop this carnage, to allow for attending to our wounds, to allow for rebuilding our life again, so that we can begin the process of replacing this culture of resentment, war, killing, hatred, displacement, etc., by another culture that we are working very hard to bring to the picture through peace, through two-state solution, and that cannot be until, you know, we put an end to the fighting now and we put an end to occupation and to allow for the independence of the state of Palestine and therefore to have a two-state solution in the ground. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.